The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Jenna Ellis Show, sponsored by Legacy Precious Metals. There has never been a better time to invest in precious metals. Visit LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com.
As a constitutional law attorney, former senior legal advisor and personal counsel to President Donald J. Trump, Jenna Ellis believes in the rule of law and the importance of integrity in our elections. And she's ready to tackle the big cultural and legal issues facing America. This is the Jenna Ellis Show. Here is your host, Jenna Ellis.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of the Jenna Ellis Show. I'm Jenna Ellis, and today we are talking all things economic policy and what the Biden administration is doing to actually devalue the dollar with woke policies. What does that actually mean? Could this shed some light, perhaps, on Ted Cruz's very interesting and kind of out of character tweet that was hashtag LGBTQ that was commenting on the Ugandan law and policy that was really more for traditional human sexuality. So what does that actually have to do with the economy? Well, we're going to talk about that centralized bank digital currency and more with Peter St. Ange, who is my special guest today, and he will join me right after this. With inflation, the banking world collapse, and everything that Joe Biden is doing not to protect America, you need to make sure to secure your financial health, especially in retirement. And hey, if you're a millennial like me, that actually is sooner than you think. You need to start now, even if you are a millennial or a Gen Zer, to make sure that your financial health is actually healthy when we get to retirement. And Legacy Precious Metals has a revolutionary new online platform that allows you to invest in gold and silver online in real time. In a few easy steps, you can open an account online, select your metals of choice, and choose to have them stored in a vault or shipped right to your door. You'll have access to a dashboard where you can track your portfolio growth in real time, anytime. You'll see transparent pricing on each coin and bar, and this puts you in complete control of your money. The platform is free to sign up for. Visit LegacyPMInvestments.com and open your account and see this new investing platform for yourself. Gold hedges against inflation and against a volatile stock market. A truly diversified portfolio isn't just more stocks and bonds, but different asset classes. This brand new platform allows you to make investments in gold and silver, no matter how small or large, with just a few clicks. Visit LegacyPM.com to get started. You can download the free investor's guide, and you can also call Legacy PM Investments to talk to a portfolio expert to get expert answers to customize your personal portfolio. So visit LegacyPMInvestments.com to get started. Tell them that Jenna sent you. All right. So joining me now to talk about all of this and more is Peter St. Ange, who is an economist at Heritage, a fellow at the Mises Institute, and a former MBA professor. And his Twitter also says a former bartender, which I'm sure has something to do with all of this economist talk, Peter. So I'm sure that factors in somewhere. But welcome to the show. Glad to have you.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on, Jenna.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, when you were talking about woke sanctions that are kind of devaluing the dollar, what does that actually mean in terms of what woke sanctions are and how the left is really trying to impact our global economy?
Yeah, so for a long time, our foreign policy has understood that you want other countries to use the U.S. dollar, right? Even your enemies. So, for example, during the Cold War, you know, we had proxy wars going on all over Earth, and still we didn't mess with the fact that the Soviet Union had to use dollars for its international trade. And the reason is because, you know, to be the reserve currency, like to be the dominant currency in the world, you want everybody to depend on you, right? Not just countries that like you, but even the ones that don't like you. And what's happened over the past couple of years under the Biden administration is that they have forgotten this fundamental wisdom. And specifically with Russia, during, you know, after Russia invaded Ukraine, the Biden administration went and seized the sovereign dollars that belonged to the Russian central bank. And they did that because they were trying to crash the Russian banking system. That didn't work. But what did happen is that every other country on earth noticed that they had crossed that red line, right? That they had weaponized the dollar as a foreign policy tool anyway, for really the first time. And so a lot of countries have started looking around for alternatives to the dollar. I mean, that was a massive own goal economically, to sort of plant this seed in countries' heads that if they do something that, you know, Joe Biden doesn't like, then the U.S. could come and crash their banking system, crash their country too. So that's really what's been pushing this sort of BRICS-led group, which is this really China-driven anti-dollar, anti-U.S. coalition. And there are a lot of countries that have been interested in that, specifically because they're afraid of something like that happening to them. Now, of course, you might say, well, most countries don't have to worry because they don't invade their neighbor. The problem now is that the U.S. is starting to get a lot more aggressive about domestic policy in different countries, right? So traditionally, you know, Saudi Arabia, for example, does not have very enlightened views about transgenderism. And it was sort of understood that, you know, they do their thing and we do our thing. And what just the other day now, the Biden administration has started putting pressure on Uganda, which is a small African country. And like most countries in Africa, they, you know, people in Uganda have relatively traditional views on things like gender and sexuality. And Uganda has a new law out that is trying to dissuade people from engaging in homosexual activity. Of course, it's nowhere near as strong as what Saudi Arabia might do. But at any rate, the U.S. now is putting this pressure on. They're threatening to cut off Ugandan exports access or duty-free access to the U.S. market. So this is potentially an escalation now in this weaponization of the U.S. economy as a way to pressure other countries into changing not only their foreign policy, but potentially even their domestic policies. And, you know, things that are maybe very close to the heart of voters in those countries.
And this is really fascinating because that this gives a broader perspective on what I and a lot of other conservatives and Christians, frankly, who do have a very biblical and traditional view of human sexuality and, you know, seeing all of these more woke policies that even Republicans have engaged in. You know, this gives maybe a broader view of why somebody like Senator Ted Cruz would actually go and tweet against the Ugandan law. And so, you know, is this something that this type of pressure in terms of domestic policy related to economics and all that Republicans are even entertaining, and they're actually cooperating with the Biden agenda on this?
It's tricky because our media is so dominated by left-wing perspectives, along with almost every institution in society, that there are a lot of politicians that, you know, if they're aiming for to appeal to a broad audience, then they end up tailoring their message, whether they intend to or not. They tailor their message towards a left-wing view. And I think people like you and I are trying to change this, trying to diversify our media so that we can actually have different perspectives and politicians don't feel intimidated and feel like they have to say things they don't believe. Now, I'm you know, sure Senator Cruz believes what he says, but I believe that there's this sort of pressure to talk yourself into sort of going along with the left's agenda, not just on sexuality, but on climate, you know, on economic policy, on social policy, really across the board.
Wow. And so how dangerous is this really to the U.S. economy if other nations are successful in either devaluing the dollar or kind of getting off of our standard, and what mm-hmm. does that actually look like in practical terms?
It could actually, if the process keeps going, these sorts of things accelerate, and it can be quite catastrophic. Sort of the way to look at it is that for about 80 years now, effectively, the U.S. has printed way more dollars than we actually need. Okay, and it's almost like we have a reservoir of dollars, and you know, between the Fed and commercial banks, they're basically printing all of these new dollars that flood into that reservoir. Normally, that would cause inflation. Okay, the water level would go up, there would be too much money. What's been happening over the past 80 years is that those dollars then flow out to other countries, because other countries use them, they put them in the central bank to, you know, stabilize their currencies, or actually a lot of foreigners save dollars because dollars have historically been more trustworthy than their own currency. So, for example, if you're a rich Mexican, you're not putting your life savings in pesos. That would be insane. Right? You're keeping a little bit of pesos because that's what you spend every month, but the vast majority of your cash savings are in dollars. So now that's fine as long as you don't change anything, right? You have this river of dollars coming in, and then it's matched up with a river of dollars that's going overseas, and then all those dollars stay over there happily held by foreigners. The problem now is if you change the rules, if all those central banks don't want to hold dollars anymore, okay, or if we have, you know, high inflation here in the U.S. and so foreigners start to think, well, you know, maybe I shouldn't hold dollars. Maybe I should park that in gold instead, for example. Then what happens is that those dollars, that river sort of reverses, and those dollars start flooding back into the U.S. Now, if that happens, then the reservoir does go up. It drowns us. Specifically, what that means would be double-digit inflation potentially for many years. That could be absolutely crippling to the country. And so they're sort of playing with fire, because once that starts, it is very hard to stop. The only way that you could really stop it, right, if countries start selling off their dollars and all those dollars are not coming back into the U.S., the only way to really stop that would be to, you know, dramatically change the fiscal course of our country, you know, so get rid of deficits, maybe even go back the dollar. And of course, none of those are anywhere near political reality, as we just saw last week.
Right. Wow. And are you hearing, I mean, all of this sounds just so obvious as you're describing it. And, you know, this is something that I'm not really hearing a lot of the Republican primary candidates, or really anybody who would be on the more conservative side against the Biden and the woke agenda on the leftist side, talking about leading into the 2024 primary. I mean, you know, and a lot of this, especially on Twitter and other media, is, you know, very not policy driven. I mean, it's all just a personality mm-hmm. contest and who can, you know, yeah. call each other names on Twitter, which I think is ridiculous. But from a policy actual, you know, platform standpoint, have you heard any of the conservative and the Republican candidates speaking really in depth about this and having a solution to kind of to draw this back if they get in office, or anybody from Congress either?
Yeah, we've had a couple of senators, specifically Mike Lee, Rand Paul. You know, there are some people who do talk about these larger issues. There have been a number of members of the Freedom Caucus, Chip Roy, who've been very, very vocal during the debt ceiling negotiations, who have really been trying to put pressure. You know, what we really achieved in the debt ceiling deal was to sort of postpone the crisis for the moment, but we are going to have to pay this down the road. We're going to pay a much, much higher price. You know, every time they kick that can, it gets twice the price. And this has been going on for a long time in this country, at least since the 1970s. And the, you know, bill keeps getting bigger and bigger. So we're looking at over $31 trillion in the national debt at the moment. The Congressional Budget Office, which is kind of the in-house accountants for Congress, they're now projecting 50 or 100 trillion going forward over the rest, you know, over the decades to come. There is a point where that is too much debt. And what ends up happening is that investors don't think that it will get paid back. And I mean, in fact, if you talk to voters, you know, we saw this during the student loan giveaway, right, where Joe Biden wanted to give away $2 trillion of loans that, you know, of course, belong to the American people. And what was striking there is that nobody cared. Right? I mean, that's you know, tens of thousands of dollars for every person who actually pays tax. In theory, that was going to be taken right out of their pocket and just handed out to deadbeat borrowers. And the people did not care. And that's, you know, we always talk about it, you know, at Heritage and think tank world, how striking it is that voters don't seem to care about the debt. Well, there could be a reason for that, which is that the voters don't anticipate ever paying it back. So at some point, investors are starting to get concerned, you know, if the debt is 50 or 100 trillion, at some point, it's just science fiction. You know, it may as well be a gazillion. It's just a made up number. So voters already sort of act like they don't ever plan to pay that back. If investors start to believe that, then it's going to be impossible to borrow that money. That then, again, that would be catastrophic for the economy, for the dollar.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. I mean, I think we're so far beyond people's even ability to rationally kind of grasp how large the national debt is that, you know, having it go up by a trillion doesn't even seem almost like just a fairy tale universe where it's like, okay, well, whatever, that, you know, this is what we've lived with so far. I mean, you know, for all of my lifetime and understanding, it's just, we've had a large national debt and that's just the way that it's been. And we haven't ever defaulted. And so it really hasn't seemed like it's actually this tangible issue that we will have to negotiate down the line. And especially for people, you know, especially of my generation, unfortunately, that are so used to living off of borrowed credit and, you know, people who have hundreds of thousands of dollars in student loans, even, it's like, oh, well, then what is it to the country to have, you know, a ton of debt as well, which is never a good thing. And so realistically speaking, I mean, I get Kevin McCarthy's position on the debt ceiling issue and saying we cannot default and we have to kind of have this stopgap. And, you know, he says that he negotiated as many concessions as he could have. People like Chip Roy and other members of the Freedom Caucus have, you know, said that they wanted more. In your view, is there a way for Republicans and fiscal conservatives to truly build on the debt ceiling issue, or was that more of a political talking point?
Yeah, what I was really hoping for, so nobody in the conversation, right, nobody at all was arguing for default. And default was never really on the table. Okay, that was a scare tactic, a fear campaign by the administration to, you know, try and scare people into thinking that the economy was going to collapse and the stock market and grandma was going to have to eat cat food. That was never, ever on the table. What was on the table was that if there was no debt deal, then the debt ceiling would have hit, which means that the government still takes tons of taxes in and still gets to spend all that money. That would have been somewhere around 4.8 trillion. It still would have had all this tax money. It would not have been able to run deficits anymore. That's all the debt ceiling means, right? It means that, you know, the government doesn't instantly shut down. They do that. They do that in order to scare people. They pretend that the debt ceiling means that, you know, they have to close the national parks and things like that. That's a cynical political strategy. But all that was on the table was, if you let the debt ceiling hit, that instantly ends the deficits. It is like having a balanced budget amendment for free. So that's really what I was hoping they would get towards, is that, you know, the worst case scenario, right? In other words, if there was no deal, if, you know, the Republicans kept pushing and the Democrats said, you guys are crazy, forget about it, then our worst case would have been no more deficits. That sounds fantastic to me. Now, if you had a government who was actually run by responsible people, then at that point, they would have said, OK, we can't spend $6.2 trillion this year. We can only spend $4.8 trillion. So let's drop the stuff that doesn't matter. Right. Let's keep paying, you know, Social Security, veterans benefits, Medicare. Right. Let's keep paying all the programs that people actually rely on, that, you know, that are widely popular. And let's find $1.4 trillion to cut out of this monster. And, you know, I think all of us know, no matter what your political party is, there is a lot of waste in government spending. I am confident that's a 22% cut in spending. Companies do this all the time. Anybody who's run a small business, you know, if you're running the hard times, and you've got to cut 20%. It's always possible. You have to make tough choices, but it's possible. I would have loved to see the federal government for one time in my lifetime actually make a tough choice.
Yeah, well, you know, the government being a non-revenue generating institution, I wonder if, you know, the dollars and the trillions and their budgets are almost, you know, fictional to them, too, because it's not their money. And so yeah. They can just say, well, you know, why should they have to deal with all of these cuts? And, you know, this is why, you know, for listeners who've listened to me, they know that I'm a huge advocate of the Convention of States project, because I don't think that the federal government will rein in itself and actually pass what amounts to a fiscal responsibility act genuinely and a balanced budget and all of this. It may have to come through the states or, you know, through the people, through an alternate means, through Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution. But, you know, but speaking of state sovereignty, in the last portion that I have with you here, Peter, and I really appreciate all of your expertise in just very plainly describing this. I think it's really important for people like me who aren't as well-versed in economics, just, you know, the clear explanations are so helpful. And speaking of state sovereignty, Governor DeSantis was, I think Florida was the first to actually say that Florida would not allow transaction in a central bank digital currency. And that has been a topic that has been increasing in national awareness. And you wrote a piece, it looks like in The Hill, that talked about CBDC. And I'm just wondering your commentary on that and perspective overall. First, for listeners who don't understand exactly what that is, and then why I think you and I would agree that that's dangerous.
Yeah, so a CBDC is basically a government crypto token. Think it's a little bit like Bitcoin, but it's one that the government runs. And governments worldwide are pushing this really hard. Voters completely hate the idea in every single country on earth, but governments are pushing them really hard. And the idea is that they would replace, say, the U.S. dollar with this like crypto token. Okay, it might still look like the dollar to you, but actually under the hood, it's this crypto token. And the reason they do that is because that gives them centralized control and surveillance over every dollar in existence. Basically, it converts the dollar from this thing that you can hold in your wallet into almost this centralized ledger where they can go in there and see all the money that everybody has. And if they want, they can transfer it. They can just go ahead and take it out of your account and put it into the other account. And so, you know, China's been one of the leading countries developing these things, unsurprisingly, because they love to control and surveil their own people. And, you know, they've really bragged about a lot of things they could do with it. They could force you to spend your money before the next election to, you know, stimulate the economy. They could make sure you're buying enough, you know, vegetables and, you know, you're not wasting your money on steak, perhaps, that you're eating the bugs. There are unlimited options for social control, social engineering. You could even use them. You know, we just saw this in Canada last year where, you know, they were cutting off the bank accounts of peaceful protesters, and a CBDC would give the ability to do that, like just a push button. So these are extremely dangerous. Like I said, you know, there have been many polls on this. Voters universal, I mean, like 4-1, 5-1, voters hate the idea, but these things keep chugging along. They've been very effective at lobbying, at sort of talking legislatures into, you know, they say it's modernization. You know, this is the 21st century. Crypto is high tech. We got to have this thing. It is a Trojan horse.
Yeah. And it sounds like, I mean, in the way that the advocates describe it, it's like, well, everything is online transactions anyway. And so if we convert dollars more into this crypto, it's actually more secure like Bitcoin. But they're forgetting to discuss the really big difference, which is that, you know, crypto and Bitcoin, why people like it is because it's decentralized and it's not government regulated and controlled, where a CBDC literally is. And so this would have a lot of things that could be attached to it, like social credit scores or, you know, any, if you don't have woke policies that govern yourselves, well, sorry, you've had too many carbon emission credits for flying too much. So you can't, you know, spend your money on these types of purchases. And that is really dangerous. And so, you know, for the people who are suggesting, well, this is just talk and everything. I mean, last year, right. And so, I mean, last year, Biden actually issued an executive order to explore the creation of this. Right. So, I mean, this is something that the Democrats, at least, are poised to genuinely consider implementing soon. Right.
Yeah. And like all surveillance technology, they're always going to claim it's just to catch the bad guys. This is just for the tax cheats and the terrorists. Every single time we've seen that with the Patriot Act over and over and over. And unfortunately, there are a lot of Republicans in Congress who fall for it every single time, like Lucy with the football.
Yep. And every single time. And you, and this is why I was an advocate and proponent of what Governor DeSantis did in Florida. And I think that that really is the most effective mechanism against this type of thing, which would to take the Uniform Commercial Code and say this is intended to provide a standard governing law for commercial transactions across state lines, and to say those types of transactions are not permissible in Florida, and basically have a protection for all of the residents in Florida. And I hope that other governors of other states and definitely, you know, Congress, who has the constitutional ability to permit or not with this, would actually say, you know, we're not going to allow for CBDC. But what can then the average, you know, individuals who's concerned about this, maybe just learning about this, listening to your descriptions for the first time, what can the average individual do to protect, you know, their wealth and to protect against something like this, you know, beyond just obviously contacting their legislators and voicing their concerns?
Yeah, it's tricky. We're looking at a period where the dollar could potentially be threatened. And, you know, this is, we've seen this in the 1970s. And, you know, back then, the most important thing was, you know, of course, protecting your house. That's actually the biggest asset for most people. Protecting your investments, you know, things like gold can sort of hedge against these. And then, of course, just focusing, you know, this is sort of, I guess, general advice in these kinds of conversations, focus on what's close to you. You know, focus on your family, focus on your career, on your skill sets. No matter what happens in the broader economy, almost everything that happens to you is under your control. So, you know, of course, contact your representatives, you know, let them know what you think. That actually, in my opinion, has a much bigger impact even than your vote. Okay, your representatives, if you live in their district, they actually will listen to you. They are eager to listen to you. They have people whose job is to listen to you. Do that. And then beyond that, just, you know, looking out for what's close to you.
And that makes so much sense. And to also be aware of what's going on so that you can engage in civil society, because, you know, so many conservatives love to say we the people, and they think that that means just exercising their constitutionally protected right to vote, not actually engaging in governments with their elected representatives all the time. And so, you know, I tell people all the time, your local legislators, as well as federal, should know your name, have your cell phone number, you should have theirs, and they should be hearing from you on all kinds of topics, and you should be informed. I mean, you know, people like you and I that deal with, you know, specific subject matter, or, you know, for me, more top level news of the day, politics, you know, I'm a little more aware maybe, but that's why hopefully people listen to you, listen to this show to be engaged and informed, so that then they can take some of these concerns to their government representative. So Peter St. Ange, really appreciate your insight and analysis. You can follow him at Prof. St. Ange. So P-R-O-F and then St. Ange is S-T-O-N-G-E on Twitter. And the article on CBDC is in The Hill. And that headline is not pulling up for me yet. So let's see. It's, are congressional Republicans about to greenlight a CBDC? That is the headline in The Hill. Really appreciate your analysis. Hope to have you back on more to explain all of these really important issues about the economy and all of this policy. So thanks so much for your time.
Definitely, Jenna. It was a pleasure.
All right. And if you are interested in other ways to protect your wealth and your assets, you can always contact legacypminvestments.com. That's our friends at Legacy Precious Metals, who are a partner here with Salem Media and a sponsor of this show. And definitely the people that I trust for financial advice and to preserve your wealth and know how you can create a hedge against inflation and protect all of your assets on a gold standard rather than just the dollar. If all of these things come to pass that we're talking about, this is a way that you can ask questions and get real answers from Christians and conservatives who genuinely care. So that is legacypminvestments.com. And I would recommend talking to them and just asking about your own financial situation and your financial health. That is legacypminvestments.com. Just when you thought it couldn't get any better, Mike Lindell with MyPillow is launching the MyPillow 2.0. I have it. I love it. I sleep on it every night. When Mike invented MyPillow, it had everything you could ever want in a pillow. But now, nearly 20 years later, he discovered a new technology that makes it even better. The MyPillow 2.0 has patented adjustable fill of the original MyPillow, and now with a brand new fabric that is made with a temperature regulating thread. The MyPillow 2.0 is the softest, smoothest, and coolest pillow you'll ever own. So for you, my exclusive listeners, the MyPillow 2.0 is buy one, get one free with offer and promo code Jenna. MyPillow 2.0 temperature regulating technology is 100% made in the USA and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Just go to MyPillow.com. Click on the radio listener square for the buy one, get one free offer. Enter promo code Jenna, or you can also call 800-564-8475 to get your MyPillow 2.0 now. So just remember, go to MyPillow.com, enter promo code Jenna for the MyPillow 2.0 or any of Mike Lindell's fabulous Made in America products. You can also go to MyStore.com and with promo code Jenna, refill all of your My Coffee and all of the great entrepreneurs' products that Mike Lindell and everyone in America should support.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.